welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Still in search of an intro.
Well, what's your name again?
I don't know. My name is Lauren Fox.
Is that the name that was given to you?
It's the name they gave me.
I got Andrew Hansen.
Yep. So here we are. We're talking about sports. Somebody actually came up to me yesterday when I was picking one of the girls up at school and told me how much they love Fox on Sports.
Who told you that?
A friend of Libby's.
Great.
Yeah. And how do you guys know so much about sports? I said it's a mirage. I know a little about a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's not quite how I describe it.
Yeah, no, it's jack of all trades. You know a lot about a lot.
I
know middling about many things, but I have this bad habit of getting up at about 5 every morning that you don't have.
That sounds like a good habit, actually.
No, it's a bad habit because I can't watch late games. Like
that does make it more of a bad habit.
Yeah, this is a topic we've never really thought through. So, but we're going to talk about it anyway because squirrel. What do you think the best time zone is to live in to watch sports?
Oh, California, West.
I've lived in 3 of the 4. Here's the problem with California. I've lived in 3 of the 4. The only one I haven't lived in is Mountain. You live in California. What time's Monday Night Football start here? 8:20?
Yeah.
Okay, so 5:20.
Or 8:15.
5:20. 5:15. That's tough to get out of work. Not to mention that usually runs into, if you have kids sporting events, things like that. I mean, it was tough for us to like leave whatever sports practice we were at in high school and go home and watch Monday Night Football. And then there was a brief period of time they moved it back to 9.
Right.
But everybody out here hated that for obvious reasons. And then they moved it back to it's 8 or whatever, 8:15. So California is good if you don't have to get anywhere after the game. But California can be tough, particularly like I remember going to Rams Raiders games or Rams Niners games, like Monday night games. You have to leave for that game at about 3.
Noon.
Before 3. I mean, the same thing held true for World Series games, too, where it was an 8 o'clock start. Well, okay, great. You want to get to San Diego for a 5 o'clock start from where I grew up. You're leaving work at 1:30, which is not always realistic. I haven't lived in the Mountain time zone, so we can knock that out. I will say without a doubt, for sports, this is the worst time zone to live in.
The East.
Yes.
Yeah.
The thing that you get in California that everybody doesn't get here, which is super awesome, you get the feeling of being able to walk into a bar or a breakfast establishment at 10 a.m. and there is a game on.
Yeah, you get that feeling on Sunday because it's real. It's actually happening.
There's a game on.
There's lots of games
all
on.
All day.
10.
And the same thing goes with college football, too. Like, college football starts at noon. Like, some of the Big 12 games start at noon. You get to walk in and queue up your favorite spicy vodka beverage at 9 and plant down all day. And then there's still probably going to be a game in Hawaii.
Yeah, right.
At 10. Like, so theoretically, you can be watching all day, which is glorious. I remember, although I do remember when I was a kid, and this wouldn't be a problem now, I remember being bummed out when you'd have a game at 10 and an NFL game at 1, and the second NFL game would be done at 4, and then you were just done. There was no Sunday night game.
But now the Sunday,
now
night, game
Sunday
is,
night game
is key. It's always a good game, so you get that from 5 to 8. And on the West Coast, you're talking about the biggest downside being the, let me rush to get to the game that starts at 5:15 local time.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that is, well, what do you do? I mean, worst case scenario, you DVR it, and so you start watching at 7.
Yes.
You watch it without commercials.
Correct.
You're done by 9, 9:30 anyway.
Correct. But in 2018, you also have to make note to shut your texts off.
Right.
Shut off everything. Don't check Facebook. Don't check the Twitter.
It's
like,
challenging.
You
but
could potentially, like, you could be watching it and you get a text. One text from somebody spoils the whole thing.
You mean, you do it enough times, you get good at it. And it is very challenging, but it is doable.
He speaks from experience.
Yeah.
I will make the argument, because I lived there when I was handicapping, the best time zone to live in was the central time zone.
Okay.
Central time zone's 1 hour behind us. So you get your game starts, Monday night game starts at like 7:15. which is just perfect.
Right in the sweet spot.
The game is done by 11.
Yep.
You, assuming you don't have too much adrenaline coursing through your veins at that point, can go
during
to
the press conferences afterwards.
Go to bed and wake up at a normal hour so that the next day you're not a completely vegetative zombie.
America's Heartland has it good.
They have it good. It was, yeah, and even a California game that starts at 7. So, like, let's say you're like, oh, yeah, I'm putting down the over in a meaningless Dodgers-Padres game. That game starts at 9. Most times, it's done by 11:30, 11:40. Like, you're good.
Yeah, those NL West Coast games always seem to be a little bit quicker than the Yankees-Red Sox games out here.
Yeah, no, it's there's pitching. It's weird. And guys,
pitchers hitting and striking
their
out.
Bat. Yeah, just it has pace. So I guess, aside from the obvious lack of proximity to any big bodies of water, the Central Time Zone was where it was at.
Well, should we transition into this most recent Monday night game for some strategy?
We could transition into that. Yeah, let's do that, and then we'll do baseball.
Okay.
Okay.
So this Monday night, for those of us who were, you know, up, even though we're on the East Coast and it's pushing 11:15, 11:30, what we have here is we've got this great matchup of Big Ben and Fitzmagic, and the Fitzmagic crew has made a great comeback in the second half, coming back from down 30-10, now to the down 30-27. Fitzmagic has over 400 yards passing. Okay, Pittsburgh can't stop them. But it's 4th and 10, they're on their 20. Okay, down 3, 2:49 left in the game. 4th and 10, you're down 3. Do you want to punt back to the Steelers and hope you can stop that offense that is pretty much unstoppable because you've got a couple timeouts? So do you punt back to them, or do you go for it on 4th and 10 with the guy who's already thrown for over 400 yards?
Well, I mean, it's easier for me to Monday morning quarterback it and know what happened. But I guess if you think of the whole probabilities thing, you punt the ball back. You have to hope for a lot of really good things to happen in short order, and your defense has to get some stops. And that's, I don't know, Derek Brooks isn't playing for the Bucs anymore. So, you know, that's...
No, he's not.
That's not going to happen.
Tony Dungy's not coaching.
No, there's no...
John Gruden's not coaching.
There's no Rondé Barber in the defensive backfield. That was a filthy, filthy setup. they had a good defense. Sapp.
Sapp was in the building watching.
That's funny. The thing that I really think you need to do at that point in time is, I mean, if you hang on to the ball, to your point, yeah, you could be down 6 if they kick a field goal.
Right. If you go for it and you don't make it, they've got the ball on 20. They probably run a couple times, set up their
field
goal.
You still have to blow timeouts.
Yeah.
Timeouts.
And you have the 2-minute warning. but even if they get a first down, they can only get one first down. And that's the other thing. They can't just keep getting first downs and run out the clock.
There's a finite amount of time. And, I mean, you can also get to the point where you go, you know what? Waving the white flag, and they're scoring in because time at this point is more important than points.
Exactly.
Because now they kick the ball, and I'm somewhat in control of my own destiny. And that's, I guess that's what it gets down to more than anything else, is the point in time where you can be back in control of your own destiny. The conventional NFL wisdom was always punt the ball,
yes,
try to get the ball back.
Put faith in your defense.
It depends who. If you're Jacksonville, I don't think that's a bad call to make there.
Or
Tampa 20 years ago.
Tampa 20 years ago, or the 85 Bears, but that's not who they are.
Right.
And they're going against a great offense.
Right, exactly. So I guess based upon what we have and what the knowns are, you know, we're talking about it because he punted the ball back and they didn't get the ball back and they lost the game. So obviously I'm going to go with the other thing.
I like that. I would have gone for it. I think the computers say in this situation, it's better to go for it. And I think based on those factors of which defense you have and what their offense is and what your offense is, you got to go for it.
I mean, as a fan, and we're all fans, I like go for it better. It's more fun.
Yeah, I think it's a real significant dialogue throughout the media with the NFL these days because of all the analytics that have shown that going for it on fourth is far more often the advantageous approach. If you look at things, simulate the play over time. And there are few coaches who have adopted to it. You know, Belichick is one of them, that guys who will go for it on fourth and short, even if it's on their side of the 50. And it's fascinating to me to see it play out because you're right. The old school mentality is punt every time.
Right.
And you don't get criticized in the media very much if you punt there on fourth and 10.
Right.
But, you know, I just think there are so many times when you see it where even if it's a bigger deficit, like if you're down 10 in the fourth quarter with 4 to 5 minutes left, you know, do you really want to punt there? Because you got to get two touchdowns or, you know, you got to get at least two scores. So, you know, you're very likely going to lose the game. You know, who really cares if you lose by 17 or 10? I mean, you gotta give your chance yourself the best chance to win. And if you've got a guy who's already thrown for 400 yards, that's a pretty solid choice to make.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm being very entertained. My English is atrocious today, and it's a wonder that I can even speak and get myself to the station. Where am I?
You're already here.
I'm here. That's good. So where's next? When you have the, I don't know, they have lightning in a bottle right now with Ryan Fitzpatrick, even though they haven't said who's going to start on Sunday, and I have to believe it's going
to
be him.
You have to. Please don't change. Please don't put Jameis back in.
I like Jameis, but you have lightning in a bottle with this guy.
First quarterback who's ever thrown three games in a row with over 400 yards.
Yeah.
First one ever, and you're going to put him on the bench? No way.
I will say this, though. The game has changed.
Yeah.
Like, it's not fair to compare anybody's stats for now to Fran Tarkenton or Johnny Unitas or Ken Stabler or whatever. Like, the game is much more vertical. You can't really touch the quarterback. They're now encased in bubble wrap. I'm okay with the penalties that are being called for egregious hits. I'm not okay with Clay Matthews being called each week for things like I realize, and I think we talked about this last week, like I realize these guys are professional athletes and I realize that they can do a lot. They're witches. They can do a lot of things that we can't do and will never be able to do. Most of us, you're in a special case. they can do a lot of things that we can't do. However, anybody who it's easy for me to sit there and watch a baseball game and say, like we were talking, beating the shift, why don't you just hit it to left field? Because the ball's 95 and moving. Like, why doesn't he just not land on the quarterback? Because he's running a 4.5 40. I don't know what that feels like to be 4.5 40 and 260 pounds and hit somebody and then immediately just like whoop.
Yeah, and if you're trying to grab, for example, Russell Wilson, who's kind of athletic and
slippery,
elusive,
yeah,
himself.
Like, yeah.
And to think about all the momentum that you have if you're running the 4.5 and you're 260 and you throw yourself in a certain direction, that's a lot of momentum
right.
to try and adjust as you're tackling.
Yeah, it's so some of the expectations, and we talked about the catch rule a few weeks ago. It's like the league always wants some kind of controversy that people will talk about. So,
well, they got it here.
Yeah, here's your rodeo clown over in the corner while we're really not discussing anything that relates to anything the league doesn't want you to talk about.
Right.
This is the narrative the NFL wants you to push.
It's a good distraction if from that vantage point. It'll change for next year.
I'm fine with that. Yeah, it's always got to be something. So the other piece, thinking about staying up late and watching games, I have been paying a close amount of attention to the Cardinals and the Brewers over the last week. The NL Central, you have three teams that are all in very close proximity to each other. Cubs, Cardinals, Brewers. The NL West, you have two that are in close proximity to each other, the Dodgers and the Rockies. Not everything is like it is up here where the Red Sox won the division in July.
Right.
This is, you have five teams that are not separated by much. The Dodgers are no foregone conclusion to win the West. The Cubs, as much as it seems like they've been in this rarefied air for a while, they're no foregone conclusion to win the Central either. The Cardinals are, I think, 4.5 games back as of Wednesday, which is what it is now. All this might be a moot point, but theoretically you could have five teams that tie for three playoff spots, and we're not going to get into the combinations and permutations that would then result. But suffice it to say, you could have some pretty interesting stuff going on in baseball at the beginning of next week.
Yeah, it's really exciting to watch. And this is a prime example of what baseball wanted when they added additional playoff teams, that you really have this legitimate possibility of either four or five teams tying at the end of 162 games. And you and I were looking at the different permutations for the play-in games. And it's really fascinating. You know, you could have, if there's a three-way tie, they've set it up so that you look at the head-to-head records and two of the three teams have to play each other. The winner then plays the third team. And so that third team only has to win one game to get into the playoffs, whereas the first two teams have to win twice.
Yep.
So it really rewards the head-to-head records, and it adds a little extra layer of competition just to get into the playoffs that we could easily see.
Yeah, it should be interesting. The only real beef I have, I would love to see baseball go from 162 to 154 games, and I would love to see the wild card be a best two out of three.
Yep.
Like, that's my only... I really do feel, particularly now, I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but it's going to happen another year, and I wouldn't put it past the Yankees to do it when they're in the wild card game, but not blow their logical game one starter. They'll roll the wild card with a bullpen. And, okay, how long can we start CeCe? And can we get two or three innings one time through for CeCe and then go to the arms in the bullpen? That would not in the least surprise me to see the Yankees do that in the wild card.
That'd be a fun strategy to see. I'm okay with 162. I like the tradition of it. I like having the best team win in any competition.
Yes.
So two out of three is usually better than one game winner take all. But it does, really makes the wild card games exciting.
Yeah.
And it puts an emphasis on trying to win your division, which makes the dog days of August a little bit more important.
Yeah, it does. It does. The only reason I would suggest going down from 162 to 154 is to get the season done a little bit earlier, to not be playing baseball almost into November.
That would be a nice,
yeah,
a nice pro.
And my other kind of weird piece, I do think there needs to be day playoff baseball. That's one of those, like, you probably did it because I did it, where at that point in time we would sneak our radios into school. And I remember it was the 80s, and I was, for some bizarre reason, we were like listening to the Red Sox and the A's. I don't remember what year it was. I think it might have been 88. Would that be right?
Possibly.
Nah, it wouldn't have been.
Oakland played the Dodgers in 88,
Oakland
right?
played the Dodgers in the 88 series, but I remember Clemens pitching, and so we were like, all right, we got to watch this thing, or we got to hear this thing. You want the games to be on at night, but there's something about day baseball in the postseason, or my parents leaving me home in 1985 to go to the Dodgers-Cardinals game six, and that was the famous game where Jack Clark came to bat with first base open. Tommy Lasorda pitched to him, or Tommy Lasorda, the Dodgers manager, decided to pitch to Clark.
He didn't get on the mound himself.
No, that would have been weird.
It probably would have been the same result.
It would have been the same result. It couldn't have been worse. Tom Niedenfuhr gave up that home run, but I remember my parents were there, and I was at school. I don't know. I would like more playoff day baseball. So. All right. With that said, we'll take a quick break. We next are joined by Bedford High Bass Fishing. I still can't say it. Bass Fishing Coach Matt Girard. I feel like I just solved a puzzle on Wheel of Fortune.
A lot of S's in there. Yeah. Make sure you say it right.
It's a phrase.
Don't misspeak.
Yes.
You're not going to win.
No. And I have to phrase it in the form of a question. So take a quick break and come right back. You're listening. You're still listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen, and we have a special guest who joined us last spring or late last spring, who has moved on from the lacrosse field to the lake. And that would be Matt Girard, the bass fish. I can't even talk. The bass fishing coach at Bedford High School. Coach, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So how was summer with the family?
Oh, summer was amazing. Much needed time, especially, you know, late in the spring we had our second child. Our son was born in May, right in the middle of lacrosse season. So I definitely didn't get to spend as much time as I wanted to with the family in the spring, you know, just because of the demands of lacrosse season are pretty high in regards to time and you know, effort and all of that stuff. So when the summer rolled around, it was definitely much needed time, and it's been a blast.
And I'm sure your wife appreciated having an extra set of hands around.
Oh,
as well.
Absolutely. She was more than thrilled season ended.
I'm sure. So when we talked last spring, I know I was surprised to hear that the high school had a bass fishing program. How long has it been around?
We've been around since, I believe, around 2012. Might have been the inaugural year that the NHIA put it together. So it's been around now 6-7 years in regards to being a real varsity sport. It's evolved to be, I want to say there was probably, when we first started, there might have been a dozen schools that got involved with it, maybe a couple more, and, you know, over the last few years, it's evolved to this year being, I believe it was 34 schools competing in the qualifier this year.
And Coach, how do you have to actually recruit your team members? Or are they fishing specialists that come to you? How does that work?
I think it's a mixture of both. You know, when we host our tryouts, we get a mixture of different levels of kids with fishing and the experience that they have. We've got, you know, some kids that are very, you know, passionate about it and fish all summer long and all spring. And then you get some kids that, you know, this might be their first time, you know, out on a boat in the middle of the lake. They're, you know, more fishing from shore and areas like that. So we get a pretty big mix, you know, when it comes to the fishing season starting. But we definitely welcome anybody who enjoys it to come out.
So we are here with Matt Girard, the bass fishing coach at Bedford High School. The question, and Hansen alluded to it, how do you conduct tryouts for something like bass fishing?
Well, it can be a bit of a nightmare in regards to, you know, the amount of kids that get. I think it all depends on the amount of kids that come out for the team. We're averaging, you know, around 10 to 12 kids a year that come out and try out for the team. And basically the format is, you know, we've kept it pretty simple each year. I take the kids out on my boat for, you know, anywhere from an hour to 2 hours at a time, and we fish together, and I get to know the kids. I get to know, you know, a little bit about their experience with fishing and some of their knowledge, and I get firsthand experience, watch them cast and use different lures and, you know, hopefully try to catch some fish. So it can be a long day with a lot of kids, but it's definitely fun and worth it.
Have you had any girls try out for the team? Because I see that on the NHIAA website, it's listed as co-ed fishing.
Yeah, we almost did this year. We had a couple of girls that were interested in trying out, and, you know, for one reason or another, they didn't end up making it to the tryouts this past fall. But there is definitely some interest on the girls' side for fishing, and I encourage that if any girl feels, you know, that they you know, want to try to become involved in the fishing program, it's co-ed, and you know, we definitely encourage it. But we haven't had any since the start.
That's pretty cool. So for practice itself, where do you practice, and how much of it is self-directed, where the kids are getting themselves out and fishing and working on technique?
Well, we're in a unique situation here to the fact that I actually use my own personal boat for tryouts and for practices, and we get the help of our principal, Bill Hagen, who brings a boat for our kids to use too during tryouts and practices. So we're kind of unique in that respect. So we have the ability to take the kids to different lakes around the area. And that's kind of what we try to do to give them a little bit of a different look at some of the fishing structures and contours and depths of different lakes to kind of broaden the horizon in regards to fishing and where the fish might be. We spend a lot of time lately on Lake Massabesic.
Okay.
I find Lake Massabesic to be a tough fishery, right, which I think if kids really get the hang of catching fish on Massabesic, it can, you know, it can translate into catching fish almost anywhere. But we also we go to Lake Pontonipo in Brookline, Glen Lake in Goffstown, Big Island Pond down in Derry. You know, we're up on Winnipesaukee a couple times a year. So these kids do a lot of traveling for fishing. We don't just come to the school and, you know, practice on the turf and leave. We actually, you know, put a lot of time into the travel aspect of it and trying to gain that experience on different lakes and ponds.
So how do you coach your team? And you touched on it a little bit, taking them to different lakes, which, I mean, for all intents and purposes, those are the different venues. You're taking them to different lakes, but how do you coach somebody? Is it more technical? What do you focus on? Or is it because there are factors, there's technique, but there's obviously also making sure that you're setting up in an appropriate spot when you get out there on the lake.
Yeah, I think it's a mix of that. I think it's a mix of, you know, the technical aspect and the actual research aspect of fishing. I think anybody can, you know, take a fishing pole and tie a line on and stand on the side of a lake and throw a line in and pray that they catch a fish. But I don't think they have the full understanding a lot of times of, you know, where fish are in the lake, you know, if it's, you know, different air temperatures, different days, contours of lakes, and the way the ledges are and the way, you know, valleys are built inside of the water and, you know, where fish like to hang out in certain parts of the day. That's kind of a lot of stuff that I try to teach the kids so that when they're out there, they're able to make, you know, a better judgment in regards to where they need to be, because sometimes it's about, you know, where the fish are at that certain time of the day, if it's in the morning versus afternoon, if it's at night, you know, the pattern changes. So I try to teach the kids that, and then it comes down to them being able to, you know, technically hook the fish and, you know, have a feeling between, you know, whether or not they're stuck on a rock or they have a, you know, a 10-pound fish on the line or, you know, they're dragging through the grass to be a little less heavy on the line. So, you know, there's a lot of aspects to fishing that people, you know, don't know, and that's what makes these kids very good at what they do.
Coach, during the actual competitions, how is the performance measured? Is it based on total weight of the fish that are caught?
Yep, it's based on total weight. Usually in a NHIA tournament in the qualifier, it's based upon a maximum bag fish of 8. So you can keep 8 fish in the live well and weigh them at the weigh-in at the end of the day. You know, you can, you know, cull the fish too, which means, you know, at the end of the 8, if you feel like you've caught the next one's bigger than one in the live well, you can cull those fish, which means you can replace it and release the other one. So that kind of gives the kids a opportunity to continue to catch it all the way to the end. So it's not necessarily about the number of fish. It really comes down a lot of times to the amount, the weight of the fish, and we kind of found that out this year.
I guess two questions. One, where can our listeners see the team in action?
That's hard to do, I think, just because we're kind of spread out quite a bit in regards to where we are. And, you know, we're out on the lake
right,
with a boat.
So it's a tough spectator sport.
Yeah, unless you're jumping in a kayak or another boat to come out and watch it, that's kind of a hard thing to do. But
most of the time
we're by ourselves, really.
It's still, though, it's, you get a little bit of peace and quiet out there, so that there's nothing wrong with that. And then for you, Coach Girard, have you ever fished competitively?
You know what? I have not fished competitively as you know, into like a big competitive tournament. You know, I fished, you know, small ones here and there, you know, just fun style tournaments.
Right.
But nothing on the professional side of it. That's something where you've got to kind of devote a lot of time to, and you've got to fish every single weekend, and with a real small family like mine, you know, with little kids, that's, you know, kind of hard to do. I'm trying to make more time for my family than I am taking it away.
Right, exactly.
At this point, I think it'd be fun. I think it's great. I've met a few of those professional Bassmaster guys from New Hampshire over the years, and I think that'd be something fun, something, you know, we try to get the kids, try to push the kids into doing that junior Bassmaster circuit that they have here in New Hampshire that gives those young kids an opportunity to get a feel for what that would be if they ever wanted to try to pursue that route. So I think it'd be fun, but I don't think I'm quite at that stage.
It seems like a lot of fun, and good time for you out there on the lake whenever you can pick it up. Obviously, you'll take it, right?
Oh yeah, I usually in the summer I fish any time I can, any lake, any pond where I can drop my boat in. I'm out there and, you know, try to take as many people who want to go as they can. And you know, I take, you know, dads and their young kids out to try to give them that experience, too, if they don't have a boat to get out there. So it's a lot of fun. It's something that's lifelong. And that's really what we're trying to teach these kids, that it's a lifelong thing. It's not just something you're going to do in high school. You're going to do it for the rest of your life and hopefully have fun with your own kids someday with it. So, you know, it's truly been a blast to have started this way back when, and we just hope to continue to have fun with it.
Well, that's awesome. We appreciate the time. We know you're heading back to class, so thank you. And as always, your great interview. Can't wait to catch up later on this year.
All right, Lauren, thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you, Coach.
All right, bye.
That was Coach Matt Girard of the Bedford High Bass Fishing Program. I'm kind of excited that we just interviewed a bass fishing coach.
Yeah, it's nice.
I know nothing.
Well, I know about, yeah. I was at zero, now I'm at like infinity compared to what I did know.
I know, exactly.
It's fun to know, to get the understanding of the actual competition.
Yeah.
How it's not just, the first fish you catch, it's not down to luck of, okay, how much did that fish weigh? You get to keep competing until the end, and you cull the fish. So you replace the lighter ones, you release them back, and you pull in the heavier one for the competition.
Well, there's certainly some science to it. And I think about like when we talk to the ski coach and they walk the course before the race. So they're trying to figure out where their soft spots, is there going to be any weird coverage, distance between gates, things along those lines. The same way that if you're going to go, I saw it last weekend, we were at that baseball tournament. They had a weird backstop. It was about 10 feet behind home plate. And it had a gymnastics mat for all intents and purposes on it. So it had some good rebounds. So what do you do if you're a catcher? You have to go out and prepare to play the ball off of that thing. And the same thing goes here. And in my limited experience bass fishing, you do the same thing. You go to a specific location, see what's there. If it's good, you stick around depending on what you get. And if you don't, you go somewhere else. But you have to... You have to make the decision to fish or cut bait.
You have to adjust on the fly.
You have to adjust on the fly. There's so many idioms that are stolen from this. No, but it's cool to see. And it's also, I kept thinking of the quote, a good day fishing is better than the best day at work.
Or a bad day fishing?
Right. A bad day fishing is better than the best day at work. That's what I meant to say. He can have a bad day fishing while he's at work.
That's right.
It's brilliant. Good career choice there. So, all right, we'll take a quick break again. Thank you to Matt Girard, the coach of the Bedford High Bass Fishing Program. Take a quick break. We'll come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. So another crazy week of stuff around the high school with sports. Never ends, man.
No, we're in the thick of it.
It is the thick of it. I forgot how nice and mellow summer was.
Right.
So football, did you see that 56-0 win over Memorial?
I saw part of it.
Okay.
I didn't get to watch the tape yet.
Okay. So Hanson has not done his thorough review of that.
Not yet.
I didn't even see anything about it. All I saw was somebody posted on Facebook, 56-0. So
yeah, I mean, I wasn't too surprised 3-0 going up against 0-3. You know, Bedford had a real solid victory. They got their subs in the second half.
Yeah, it's 56-0 is a good opportunity to get everybody a little bit of action on the football field. So congrats to the football team with that. Soccer, you were there on Saturday for that 5-0 win over Winnicunnet.
Yeah, I got to watch the first half, and I was really impressed. I'm going to give you two words to describe Coach Pepper's squad.
Okay.
Ball control. They
really
had really, really impressive ball control. They must have had possession for 80% of the first half. They just, it was a clinic. It was really impressive. You can tell how well coached they are. They, you know, they used all four of their defenders to, you know, pass it back, pass it forward, go side to side. They would swing it and go up the side. It was just a well-oiled machine. And Victor had a couple of amazing plays dribbling the ball to create space. He would do these reverse spin moves, and you know, his impact, I think, is going to be pretty significant. But the thing I wonder about with that team is they controlled the ball so much that their defenders really didn't get challenged very often.
Okay.
And so you wonder about later in the season, heading into the playoffs, how many pressure situations are those defenders going to be in? Because in that game, there weren't any in the first half.
Right, and I saw one of the stats, not from the Winnicunnet game, I think it was from a Windham game where Bedford had 27 shots on goal, Windham had one.
Exactly.
I mean, like, if you're the goalie, you're like the Maytag repairman. Like, you just kind of, stand there and do what? Like, just wait?
I mean, you bark out signals and you communicate, but he was rarely tested if at all. I really don't think they had a shot on goal in the first half, if I remember correctly. I mean, they got it down towards the 18 a couple times, but the only thing I guess you can hope for is in practice, you have your offensive guys going against your defensive guys, and that's how they get their reps against very talented players is in practice.
Right. I mean, you hope that they do, but yeah, I mean, that's not an unfounded concern that you want your guys to be tested at some point during the season. They won yesterday, Tuesday, against Goffstown 4-1. Ryan Slijewski with a pair of goals, Koski with a pair as well. So the Bedford boys soccer team cranking. The girls were on a roll, too. They were 6-0 before losing at Londonderry yesterday 5-1, which you look at that, and obviously we haven't talked to Coach Winning in a few weeks, but you look at that 5-1 loss and you say, yeah, that's rough. What happened?
Everyone must have been sick.
Yes.
That was yesterday being Tuesday in the rain?
Yeah, Tuesday in the rain.
Because this is Wednesday.
Yeah, yesterday being Tuesday in the rain. Monday in the rain. Was it raining Monday? I don't know. It was Monday anyway. The blues from the weekend. The you know, the good that you can take out of that is that's a loss in the middle of the season that can really be an eye-opener for a team that was expected to contend in the postseason. So you don't want that loss to come too close to the end of the season. Like, right about now,
perfect.
It's about the right time to have that.
Yep.
Because you can now ratchet up the tempo and practice a little bit if you're Coach Winning. Now, I'm not saying that's what she's going to do, but it certainly helps to have that extra motivation of, hey, look at these guys. We thought we were cranking. These guys handed it to us. So, yep. All right, you thought you were rolling. What about now?
Coach Winning will have their attention even more than usual.
Yes.
No doubt.
So, and the girls soccer team gets back out on the pitch tomorrow, which is Thursday, which you're not going to be listening to the show now because, well, the show airs on Saturday. Thursday at 6 p.m. and then back next Monday at Portsmouth. So busy time for the high school. Looking at the world of golf right now, we finally got what we wanted.
Oh, we sure did.
I didn't watch it.
It was just a matter of time.
I was driving.
I taped it, so I get to watch the last few holes last night.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, pull up the clips of Tiger on 18. It was an incredible sight, where he was walking up the 18th with Rory. They're in the last group, and there were thousands of fans on the 18th hole walking up behind him.
It was
almost running.
It was like a tide rushing in, and it looked like people were rushing.
And Tiger had to be nimble and skip his feet just to get ahead of them to get up to his ball and not get run over.
It was like Black Friday at Walmart.
Yeah.
Like, people were like, oh my God, I can't miss that. I need to get to the right thing. I mean, the, and it kind of brought to mind, like, you're a little kid and you're really excited. You just got into the amusement park and you want to be the first one to ride whatever.
Yeah.
I want to get there and I'm so excited. I need to get there. And everybody, they were talking about it on ESPN yesterday, like, who else can bring everybody together? For whatever reason, it's Tiger.
He
just is.
He's like no other. I mean, they're walking up and Rory actually tells him, hey, look behind us. You know, look at what's going on. And then they're smiling, they're laughing. And then it wasn't even just in the fairway, by the way. There were people running through the bunker on the side of the fairway.
Cool. It's just fun.
Just teaming forward. It was just, it's an amazing scene. And then to see Tiger's emotions, you know, he chipped out of the bunker, two putts for par. He could have taken three putts, but he said he knew that he had it at that point because he was about 7-8 feet away.
Yeah.
And it hit him and he started celebrating with his caddy, Joe Cava. And then he makes the putt. He's going to shake hands with Rory. And you could tell that he was fighting back tears.
Yeah.
And he even said so afterwards.
Yes.
That it was all hitting him. And I mean, it just sort of, to see him that real and raw is really a fun thing because of how buttoned up he was back in the day.
Yes.
He was, you know, he wouldn't let people in. He kept that, you know, that wall around him to help with, you know, the competitor that he is. And he kind of he's letting people inside the facade now a little bit.
Right. And when he gave the hug to his caddy, you could read his lips. He said, finally.
Right.
And I'm sure Sneds and Stads were very.
And Sansy.
Yes. Now everybody has fake nicknames. But no, I mean, it was fun to see, like, the I don't know. Do they have a nickname? The Brat Pack. The Koepkas and the. Ricky Fowlers and
Thomas, like, Spieth,
all those guys afterward, it was like they were human beings too, because they were fans. Like, they're watching this thing like, we just got to see this too. This is really cool. You know, and that at the end of it, like, we talk about the guys in the NFL who are superhuman athletes and these guys who are golfers who are literally superhuman. The level of precision with which they play is astonishing, but they're people. And sometimes you need to get reminded of that. And Sunday was a really good reminder that, yeah, we're all fans. As much as these guys want to win, they also, yeah, it's fun to be part of history too.
Yeah, and speaking of the interaction with the other players in the trophy ceremony, they also awarded Justin Rose with the FedEx Cup because he won the FedEx Cup points long tournament and he got that $10 million bonus. And to see Tiger interact with him, he gave him legitimate compliments that were sincere, calling him the best golfer in the world, you know, shaking his hand with emotion. That was really fun to see too. And taking a step back, it was also fascinating to watch Justin Rose on the 18th hole because when he hit the green in two, he had to make two putts to win $10 million. If he three putted, he didn't win the FedEx Cup. It would have been Tiger's. So
yeah.
Tiger was one putt away from Justin Rose from winning the FedEx Cup $10 million bonus for, again, the guy who was on his couch in his bed a year ago, couldn't walk. And to think he was one shot away from winning the FedEx Cup is just incredible.
Yeah. So that was fun. We were driving, so I did not see it, but I was following it on my phone. So it was good to see the conclusion of that. And then, I don't know, speaking of greatness that has kind of hit the skids up here, our New England Patriots, and I know why.
Okay. Sure. Please share.
You know why?
Why?
Because coffee's full price at Dunkin' on Monday. If the Patriots win, there's no incentive for them to win anymore.
Ah, that hurts.
You know, it's, it used to be back in the good old days, it was free. Cool. I'm getting my free coffee because the Patriots won. Like, for a kid who's not from here, yeah, it's fun. It's fun when they win because I'm watching it with people who are from here more often than not, and it's fun when they win. Even when the coffee was 87 cents, I was like, I'm going. I'm getting myself my medium hot pumpkin with two creams only. Coffee is full price again this year.
Well, so there's no fan support anymore.
The fans just don't care because coffee's full price.
But the thing is, the game on Sunday night was in Detroit. So you'd think that the Pats wouldn't be relying on their fan base quite as much on the road. And it was Tom Brady going back to his roots. You know, he played in Michigan.
Yep.
So it was almost a quasi-home game for him. And he turned in one of the worst performances of his career. He only passed for 133 yards. I think the stat I saw was that it was his lowest yardage in 4 years. And that game was just stunning to watch. Their offense looked awful. I mean, it was the most vanilla game plan I've ever seen from them. They just wanted to hand the ball off to Michelle and see if it could get 3 or 4 yards. It was as if they had a new offensive coordinator who wasn't a genius,
yes,
like he is. And it actually reminded me, if you follow the Pats closely enough over the last decade, there's a trend that always pops up at the end of the year when they play at Miami. They always throw in a clunker where it's almost like if they have home field wrapped up, they just want to come out with this basic game plan. They don't want to get anybody hurt. They don't care if they win. They really don't. And that's what it looked like in this game. It was like, why are you not using your best plays to try and win this game? Do you just want to hand Matt Patricia his first win for Detroit?
You know, it's weird because we all tend to attribute a lot to the genius of Bill Belichick. And last week after they lost to Jacksonville, it was, well, they don't want to open up the playbook and they're going to see it all come playoff time. And now week three, it's, well, maybe he wanted to give Patricia a W. And,
yeah.
Okay, but eventually, like, wins count.
You can't keep giving them away.
You can't. Yeah, that's really the brutal truth. And I maybe things change when Josh Gordon gets a little bit of time out on the field. He is a very electric player. That will help. But, I mean, realistically, I don't know, who's leading the AFC East right now?
Miami's undefeated.
Miami's 3-0.
And they're playing Miami this week.
So Miami's 3-0. This is one of those that I would look at and say the Patriots will win this week.
They're going to have all the motivation.
So Miami's 3-0, but I mean, just do the basic math on it. Okay, let's say, for sake of argument, 11-5 wins the division. So the Dolphins close out the season going 8-5. Nothing spectacular. The Patriots, in order to get to that 11-5, now need to go 10-3 to close things out. That's a tall order.
And I would not bet against them. I think they'll go 10-3 at least. And I think they'll wake up. You know, but I'm a little bit concerned. Not really, because I think, you know, the game at Jacksonville is, as you describe, okay, we very well could face them in the playoffs. We're not going to show them our entire playbook. It's 95 degrees. It's hot. Okay, fine. But to then do it again in Detroit, you know, I have some concerns. But really, I think you have to tip your cap to Patricia. They just had a really good game plan. Their ball control, speaking of ball control with Bedford Soccer, was terrific. They had, I don't know the final time of possession, but it was about 40-20. I mean, it was incredible how little the Pats had the ball, because they had those three and outs to start the game. And then, you know, they're playing from behind. The crazy thing was they didn't open it up. You know, there was no sense of urgency early in the third quarter, where they started going five wide and, you know, using all of their weapons like they normally do. But with Gordon likely playing this week, I think you'll see a much better performance. You know, Brady can't stand to go 1-3, and they always talk about how important it is to win the division. That's always their first goal. And if they lose to Miami, they're going to be behind three games after 4 weeks.
Right. I mean, you lose to Miami, now you're 1-4, and you have to, or you're 1-3.
They're 4-0.
Yeah, and you theoretically have to now find a way to go 10-2 to close things out.
Right.
I mean, it's not impossible, but you leave yourself very little margin for error. Particularly, you know, I know Tom Brady takes wonderful care of himself, but as an older athlete, as you are and as I am, the miles just add up. Like, if you're the Patriots, honestly, you want to get your wins, get the chippies early in the season. While Brady, before the season, has kind of accumulated on him and some of the older guys. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what's going on in Patriot land. So, take a quick break. We'll come right back. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen, although Hansen's currently not joining me for this, but we are joined by Bedford High golf coach Dan Colburn, coach of the defending state champions, and team's off to a good start this year. So tell us about the team, coach. Who are the veteran leaders and who are some of the newcomers?
Well, we only graduated one senior last year, so the main core that we brought to the state tournament last year is back again this year. Our main veterans, CJ Ledoux, who won the individual state championship last year. He's our number one. And then we're anchored with Stoughton Bell and Luke Ramsey. And then, one of our freshmen who played well last year, Brady Burke, is now a sophomore, and he's right there as one of our linchpins as well.
That's, it's nice when you can have your leaders return, particularly one of whom is the defending state champion in CJ Ledoux. Now, what style of play do the Bulldogs have on the course? Lots of big hitters who have wedges into the greens, or shorter hitters who just keep it straight and score well that way?
A little bit of both. I mean, a lot of the kids can hit it a long way, but, you know, like they say, drive for show and putt for dough.
Yep.
So we try to focus on keeping it in the middle and middle of fairway, middle of the green, and get our birdie and pars and go on to the next hole.
That's a recipe for success as it comes to golf. We're here with Bedford High golf coach Dan Colburn, and this year we've seen some good numbers that have been put up by the team and some different names at the top of the leaderboard week in and week out. What performances have you been most proud of this year for the golf team, whether it be a shot or a special round by one of the players?
I think the biggest, not surprised, but the thing that I have enjoyed the most is watching the development of sophomore Brady Burke. He was a freshman last year and really didn't know what to expect, and really played well, and then worked hard this offseason, and he's played well and been solid all season long. And then there's a newcomer, a freshman, Elliot Wallace, and we're expecting real good things out of him.
How much do you find that having a team of more experienced players versus younger players tends to make the team better as a whole?
Because the veteran guys really take the younger guys under their wing, but the younger guys always want to try to play better than the older guys. So it's a friendly little competition they have with each other.
That's fun. So the season seems to be flying by. Senior day was postponed this week due to rain. There are only a few chances left for our listeners to see the team. Is Senior Day going to be rescheduled?
Senior Day has been rescheduled, but due to a course availability, we are not able to play at Manchester Country Club this year. So we're actually, our last match is our senior match, and that is going to be held at Stonebridge Country Club on October 2nd, the last day that we can actually play any matches at all.
Nice. So that's next Tuesday, October 2nd at Stonebridge, right after school. And the Bedford High team will be having their senior day out there on the links. What would you like to see happen, coach, during the rest of the regular season to get the team ready for states? Are there any key improvements that you're hoping the team will make?
I'd like to have us focused on some short game work around the green, chipping and bunker work and stuff like that. We're playing at the Oaks out in Somersworth, and they've got some chunky greens and some tricky traps and stuff like that. So focusing on that is what I'm hoping to do there the next week or so.
It's a lot to think about, particularly that's where you can really spend a lot of time working, and you can really see the dividends, and you know that, and I know that, but sometimes it's hard to convince a high school kid that that's where they can really pick up strokes.
Right, exactly. That and on the putting green, it's hard to get them to, you know, to spend the time there. They just want to go out and, you know, hit the driver and think that's all they need to do. But once they realize that that's not what it's all about, they kind of buy in and you know, and we work at it. So
Right, and it's not just practice for the sake of practice. It's the good focus practice where you're paying attention to everything that you're doing and making sure that you can execute what you're trying to do in practice within an actual match setting. It's not an easy thing by any stretch.
No, it's not. We try to do little things while they're out playing, depending on the course we're going to play at. Like, if we know a course is going to be real, real narrow, and we're playing at MCC for practice, and they hit it out of the fairway, I may make them do 90 degrees into the middle of the fairway as a shot and then go into the green from there. You know, little things like that just to try to get them to really focus on their game. But they're pretty driven, so it's not hard to get them. Not hard to get them focused.
That's a good thing, and that's more of a cultural thing within the program. We're here with Bedford High golf coach Dan Colburn, and Hanson and I, week in and week out, tend to talk about Tiger Woods, and up until this week, it was, will he win? And then this week, it was obviously, well, looks like he won. He won his 80th. How has he impacted your players, if at all, many or all of whom were born after the late 90s boom that Tiger brought to the game? Do they talk about his comeback and what's going on with him on the course?
Some of them do. And, you know, there's some that are like, oh, I hope he wins. And other kids are like, no, he shouldn't win. He's a dog. And so it's kind of funny to hear him banter back and forth. And, they, you know, each kid's got their own, like, favorite that they like to follow. But, you know, it's always a good time to listen to him talk. As long as they're talking and watching golf and trying to learn, that's all we really hope for.
Who do the kids like to watch?
They like Jordan Spieth. They like Rory. They like Ricky Fowler. So yeah, they like the big guys.
Yeah, I would have been surprised if Ricky Fowler wasn't in that equation. It seems like he's like the golf everyman. He's not a big guy, but he mashes and plays a good round of golf too.
Yeah, he does. Just hoping he breaks out here pretty soon.
Exactly. So from a coaching perspective, when you're talking to your team about strategy for match play or for stroke play, are there any players that you will focus on that you use more as an example when you talk about them watching golf?
Not really. What I usually try to get them to say, if you're going to watch some golf, is how would you apply your game to a particular hole? Not necessarily force your game on the hole, but like what things do you do well, and how would you play the hole that they're showing you on TV, and then talk about it that way. Because nobody can recreate what the pros do. I mean, they're just unbelievable.
Right. Well, it's this sort of superhuman thing that they make look easy on TV. Andrew Hanson, my co-host, had the opportunity to play Bellerive the Monday after the PGA tournament, and threw some pictures up on the Fox on Sports Facebook page. The rough there, I mean, it was significant, and the rest of us would be lucky to move the ball 15 yards out of that. And these guys are hitting it and somehow managing to make it dance on the putting green as well.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know how they do it either. It's just amazing.
So speaking of match play, and then we'll let you go, cause we know you have practice to go to. We'll see it at the highest level this weekend in the Ryder Cup. Are you thinking the U.S. can pull off a rare feat for them and win on foreign soil over in Paris?
God, I hope so. We're due. We are due. I always like watching match play, and the kids do too. And then next week during practice after the season gets done, I usually have them do a little match play event just to kind of lighten the mood a little bit. And they get real competitive with that, so they like it.
Sounds good. Well, you guys are fortunate to be able to get out on the course whenever the weather's good, and we wish you all the best the rest of the way.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That was Coach Dan Colburn, head coach of the Bedford High golf team. And that's going to do it for us this week on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Wanted to take a moment, thank everybody here at 105.1 for allowing us to get on the air yet again. Bill Jennings, Chris Gentry, Colleen Richardson, and of course, Harry Kozlowski. And thank you to our guests as well. Always excited to have some coaches from the high school here. Matt Girard, the head coach of the bass fishing program at Bedford High School, as well as Dan Colburn, the head coach of the golf team at the high school. Thank you also to my co-host, Andrew Hanson. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to join us for this last segment, but as always, does a great job preparing everything for the show. With that said, enjoy a great sports weekend. We'll catch you next week. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.